Well, hello, everybody. My name is Mark. I am Mark Boyle of The Mark Boyle Show and Prepper Guy. So I had mentioned in previous shows that I wanted to do a special memorial kind of episode on Robert Lavoie Finicum. So Robert Lavoie Finicum was gunned down in Oregon on January 26, 2016. And so I kind of wanted to just remember what really went on in Oregon and how the media and the government just so played it in a way to where everyone thought he was kind of a kook. And so no big loss, good riddance. But no, that's not really what happened. The Hammond family had been arrested for starting a fire on some federal land, which was actually their land that they were leasing for grazing. And for years, they had been doing controlled burns. But they said that the fire actually had spread over to some of the federal land, and it caused some damage. And that was partially true, but we're not talking about thousands or hundreds of thousands of acres. They were talking about maybe a small part of an acre or two that burned across their land, their grazing land, into federal land. So the media and the government had to react more harshly than they did in Baltimore with all the riots going on there at that time and people burning police cars and public property and private property and everything in Maryland. So I didn't really ever understand why they had to react so harshly on this one. But I guess that was federal. You know, nobody cares about some city or some liquor store owner getting his shop burned down. This is federal land. So the issue became about federal land. Now, if you read the Constitution, the only land that can be considered federal land would be forts and ports and armories and things like that. Washington, D.C. is federal land, and that's why for years they didn't really have representation there because they were more of a district and part of the federal government and not a state. So it became a big blow-up in the county there in Oregon, and the Hammonds were arrested, and they spent a little time in jail, and then the federal government decided to re-prosecute them again and put them in prison for more time, which is kind of almost like double jeopardy, but they had created a scenario to where it wasn't double jeopardy. It was just another charge of terrorism, which really kind of makes you wonder how can it, you know, a couple ranchers be classified as terrorists? I don't know. So they were calling the protesters in Oregon occupation of a federal building because there was a building, just like any, you know, federal park or forest service that you or I could go visit on any given day. There was a building there, and the park service was closed, the refuge there, and no one was there. So they occupied the building. They didn't damage it. They didn't burn it down like a liquor store in some of these riots or any of that. So all they did was occupy it and use it pretty much for, you know, a headquarters. And then they used some of the equipment, which is federal equipment, which belongs to we the people. They didn't damage that. A case could be made that they shouldn't have used some of the equipment, but it's not a terrorism case that could be made. It's just, why did you use the tractor? I mean, there's city tractors all around where I live, you know, and they'll leave them on a job site. And, you know, I could go over there and start it and drive it around and maybe do some landscaping or something to save a few bucks on tractor rental. And they would probably get quite upset and charge me with, you know, stealing or appropriating a city tractor. It's not a terrorism charge because it wasn't an act of terrorism. It was pretty much like shoplifting, but on a bigger tractor scale. So they occupied a federal building and started a protest. you know, just saying, hey, wait a minute. And the bigger picture on what happened in Oregon back in 2016 was really more about federal land. And the protest was about a state's right to own that land and the citizens to use that land, as opposed to the federal government seizing it, in a sense, and using it for a park or a wildlife refuge or any of those other pie-in-the-sky reasons that the federal government doles out whenever they want to take land. So it was a protest on a state's rights and a rancher using that land, kind of what had happened with the Bundys, but it was a little different, but similar. So the whole protest kind of got going because of Lavoie Finnegan was the spokesman and started really rallying the crowd. He wasn't inciting violence. He was just saying, hey, this is our land and the federal government shouldn't be here. And so why are the Hammonds in prison for setting fire to federal land that should not exist? And why would it be classified as terrorism in any case? You know, if a vagrant in Washington, D.C. Starts a garbage can on fire, well, that's a fire on federal land. And yet they wouldn't prosecute that vagrant for terrorism. So it got some momentum and some legs going in the media. And so it just snowballed. So some of the Hammond family, they were supportive of the protest and what Finnegan was doing. Some of the things they were saying is that Dwight Hammond and his son, Stephen Hammond, kind of, and the family distanced themselves from the protest. And that's fine because the protest wasn't about them. It was about the wildlife refuge and the federal land issue. So they said, that, you know, the Hammond family said they understand the underlying anger over federal land policies that many here feel are intrusive and overreaching. But they were still distancing themselves from that, which, you know, is fine because they have family members in prison and going to court cases. And you don't want to be speaking out and maybe causing more problems for those that are in court. Not like a gag order, but more of just like keep your mouth shut and don't kick a sleeping dog. So one of the people, Roger Wilson, a retired outfitter, was asked about it, and he's 74. He drove about 60 miles just to sit in his vehicle and watch what was happening to get his own view of the situation, and he felt a little conflicted about it. And Mr. Wilson said he was an admirer and a friend of the Hammond family, and I quote, "I support them 100%. But he added that he was very weary about what might unfold with the arrival of armed outsiders. I don't want to see them causing problems down here. So he was a local outfitter, and he drove 60 miles just to watch what was going on. And at that time, some of the militias had showed up in support of this protest, I guess we'll call it, and the use or the taking of state land and making it federal land, which is also unconstitutional. And so he didn't want to see the armed people causing problems. So I guess that's, you know, the federal government can steal land from a state and hundreds of thousands of acres, and it's unconstitutional. And that's not a problem to some people. So basically, don't rock the boat, I guess is what he was saying. It's like, you know, just don't make problems here. Well, the federal government's the one making the problems by stealing state land all across the United States. And there's a lot of issues with that. It financially cripples a state when BLM and the government steps in and takes big chunks of land and then writes their own leases and takes a lion's share of the income derived from that lease, whether it's mining or oil or logging. And then the state is forced to go hat in hand to the federal government and go, hey, can we get some money to build a school? And the federal government's like, well, you know, we just built you a school, basically, because they have all the money. See, they took the state's lunch money. And now when the states go back to the bully and say, can I have a quarter of my lunch money to buy a hot dog? The federal government's like, well, what do you need that for? And it's like, well, hey, that was my lunch money. But see, the bullies and the federal government don't look at it that way. They're like, it's our money now. And shut up, basically, because we've taken your land and we've done it through all these BS laws. And therefore, it's constitutional, I guess, even though it's not constitutional. But we allow these things to slip under the cracks and become, in a pseudo sense, legal through just allowing it to happen over and over and over again. It becomes a precedent that the courts will look to and say, well, no, they've done it before and it's okay. We don't mind. They don't mind that the federal government is violating the Constitution that only grants them certain powers and authorities and rights. Actually, a federal government has no right. It has authority to do certain things. And taking of land from a state is not in their authority. And some of the social media, they just ran with this, you know, protest left and right. While news organizations were initially using @OregonUnderAttack hashtag to talk about the standoff, Twitter's users started using some less neutral terms to refer to the militia. And the primary hashtag for Twitter users began employing was hashtag #YaAlQaeda, clearly linking the Oregon group to Al-Qaeda, which kind of makes it seem more like, you know, all of this, the accidental fire, the arresting and imprisonment of the Hammonds, and the protest was all some form of act of terrorism, which I guess from a federal government's point of view, it is terrorism, because the founding fathers were originally considered treasonous. And when they all signed the Declaration of Independence, that was a treasonous act to the king. You know, it was fine for us because we're like, hey, screw you, king. But at the time, but we don't operate under a monarchy, and it's not terrorism to demand a redress of issues and to say, you're unconsciously taking our land and we're using this protest as a starting point to create a debate or to open a dialogue, which I hear in the news all the time. So it wasn't, you know, like anybody was getting hurt. There was no burning of the equipment that they borrowed or anything. It was, they were just hanging out at a wildlife refuge, kind of like you take your family to a national park and you hang out. That's not a protest. They had every right to be on federal land, if you want to call it that, just because it's classified as a park, a wildlife refuge. So if you took your family there, you're hanging out. But I guess they were a little, you know, butthurt about the whole thing. So I've done a bunch of podcasts on Prepper Guy, going back to, you know, some of my older episodes, which was back to episode 26 and those. So I was wondering, you know, just to get some thoughts on all this. It's like, when the feds bought land back in the day, like the Louisiana Purchase, we the people paid for it, and we the people owned it. The money was borrowed, and we were on the hook for this loan to buy the Louisiana Purchase. And so it belonged to we the people. The federal government made the loan and co-signed for it and put, you know, us on the hook for it. And that was all that good faith in the, you know, the American credit and all that. And so it was paid for and paid back by taxes from we the people. We owned it. It was ours. So when the government borrows money, they really borrow it in our name. And when they make a purchase, it's made in our name. So the protesters at Oregon are right and the feds are wrong, because they're standing for liberty, just like the founding fathers. And they're saying, when Oregon was created as a state, there was an enabling act, just like what Bundy had said, read the Nevada Enabling Act, which I did. You can Google it. It's only a couple pages. And it was one of the older enabling acts, so it wasn't filled with legal jargon and doublespeak. But what they all say, in a sense, is you're taking this land that is a territory, and we're going to turn it into a state. So it's like you're buying raw land, and we're going to turn it into a neighborhood. We're going to turn it into a house lot. It's yours. And the Enabling Acts say that the state can do certain things with that land, but it belongs to the people in the state. So there is no state and there is no federal government. It's always an entity, an it, that is created to govern for the people, because there's a lot of people in a state or in a federal government. So it's the management of all that, and it's bigger than an individual, so it can accumulate more strength to protect the state or money to build a big project like a school or a dam. This is, so it's an it. So the land basically in Oregon and Nevada and every state is owned by the people. And the federal government says all that we want is if we want to build a fort or a port, like a seaport, or an armory, or a post office. These are things that we have an authority to have put in a state on specific amount or percentage of land. So we're giving you it all, but we have the right to build a few things if we need to, but not a park, not a wildlife refuge, not a sanctuary. So it belongs to the people in that state. There's been no change or no amendment to the Constitution that I've seen to where the federal government can come back and go, we changed our mind. We're going to take all the land back and give you a smaller amount. We'll still call it the state that you live in, and we'll leave the boundaries the same, but you no longer have ownership or the use of that land, which is in violation of the taking clause, because if you can't operate or do things on your land, whether it's your private property or a state, then in a sense you have no ownership anymore, so you can't use it. Therefore, they have taken it from you. So it's pretty simple. You know, they repossess your car and you can't drive it anymore. They've taken it. Even if they were to leave it in your driveway, you can't use it. So it's been taken from you. And that's how the taking clause is interpreted. So the federal government has come in and taken land from states all across America and then dictating back to the states how to use that land. And these leases are a big part of it. And so the protesters in Hammond were saying, and Lavoie-Finneken were saying, hey, this is wrong. And they were trying to call attention to it. Now, unfortunately, in the next part, we will talk about just what kind of attention was brought to this issue. But it wasn't any good for sure. You know, and it was played kind of like a violin by the feds and the media that turned the whole argument against a righteous cause and turned it into a dog and pony show. So we're going to take a break and then we will get back into how this became a dog and pony show.
Hi, this is John Jeffers inviting you to listen to my show, The Jeffers Brief. You know, on The Jeffers Brief, we discuss topics of interest and concerns for preppers and patriots. You can only find us on the Comptor Radio Network on podbean.com or KYAH 540 AM, Utah's Talk Authority. Hope you join me and we'll talk to you then.
So Hyatt mentioned that these laws have been skewed over the years and become some form of legal mandate that the federal government can take land in a state and use it for its own purposes. You know, so like the BLM and public lands, grazing, and all these laws are federal and have no legal authority in any state. So you got the Taylor Grazing Act of 1934, you have National Environmental Policy Act in 1969, Endangered Species Act of 1973, Federal Land Policy and Management Act 1976, Public Range Land Improvement Act 1978. So these are not like written back in 1776 or any back, you know, then during the ratification hearings and all that. They're just acts that have been heaped upon. So federal agencies do not have state power because they're federal. And due to the Constitution's structure of dual sovereignty, the feds, BLM, have no authority to enforce state law. Furthermore, states cannot be compelled to enforce federal laws. So in 1994, the 10th Amendment was reaffirmed by the courts when Sheriff Mack and Prinz sued the Clinton administration. And the opinion in the Mack-Prinz v. United States in the Supreme Court, the framers rejected the concept of central government that would act upon and through the states, and instead designed a system in which state and federal governments would exercise concurrent authority over the people. The federal government's power would be augmented immeasurably and impermissible if they were able to impress into its service and at no cost to itself the police officers in 50 states. Federal control of state offices would also have to an effect upon separation of the equilibrium of powers between the three branches of the federal government. So I'm sorry I read that really poorly, but it's from an old post, and I kind of suck at reading. But what it's saying is the way the Constitution was set up, that they work together to get things done, and it's, you know, an equilibrium. And so therefore, if a federal government can start controlling a state, then does it not also have power to control the Congress within the state? So the federal government, the president, might be getting more authority because he's now telling Congress what to do. And Congress and the House is a third of the three branches of government. So they have to remain equal, and that's why you can't have this, what was it called, dual sovereignty. So what happened in Oregon was the feds came in and did their, you know, their rooster dance and acting all big and bad and telling the local and law enforcement officers to back down, which is what they always do. And they said that they had authority. So before the Prohibition era, federal authorities would have to come in and ask sheriffs to enforce their federal laws or even state laws in a sheriff's jurisdiction. But back when the 18th Amendment was ratified, it specified that federal and state governments would have concurrent power to enforce and ban intoxicating beverages. Now the feds assume that the states will just enforce any law it comes up with today. Even activities with black markets have special little federal task force waiting to step in. So one thing stands in the way, and that's the sheriff. Not all states and counties have a sheriff, but the sheriff is the elected official and usually known as the highest law enforcement officer in a county. So what ended up happening was the sheriff just was a spineless little coward. And when the governor and the judge in the Hammond case and with this protest raised a stink, the sheriff, instead of representing his constituents, the Hammond family, he decided to hide under his desk and just, you know, wet himself, I guess. So he allowed the feds, basically through his inaction, to claim authority to act in this county and to call all the shots. So during all this time, you know, when in 16, Cruz and Rubio were taking the Fed's side and proving that they are not for the people. The protesters are making a stand for private property rights, and nobody was supporting them, and BLM was failing to properly manage the public lands based on wildlife statistics, and this is nothing more than a massive land grab. So you had all of the alphabet soup agencies there, you know, trying to shut down this protest. And I had said back prior to this that any blood, you know, that was shed would be on the hands of the federal agencies and the county sheriff and the governor and the judge. But, you know, no one really wanted to pay attention to what was going on. We all just wanted to sit there and go, oh, my God, these protesters are crazy. And I guess to really get to a point. I mean, I'm just trying to read some of the things that were going on back then and some of the cases that were being brought up in the past, why the federal government, the feds, have no authority in a state. And only if the state just does nothing, then the feds will fill that vacuum. And they do it in a way through basically state welfare, you know, by saying, well, you know, if you scratch our back, we'll build you that school. Well, we would have had that money to build the school if you hadn't stolen it from us. So it's kind of like, be nice to the bully. And if he takes your lunch money, he might give you half of it back to have a hamburger for lunch. And that's, you know, what the federal welfare, you know, is to a state. It's using their tax money that they have taken from a state unconstitutionally by stealing federal land and then writing leases that the state have nothing to do with and they have no control over and they don't get any of the money. The money is just basically siphoned off of from a state before the state can even account for it or add it up. That's how it works. So the protesters got pissed. And Lavoie Finnegan was saying some things that were really, I think, hitting kind of hard. I'm not saying he was hitting below the belt, because he was not. He was just making some points. So all of the three percenters, not all of them, but a lot of the groups from the three percenters and the Oath Keepers, they were all there in the form of militias and stuff like that were there and trying to just, you know, I guess be kind of like a bulwark to keep the federal agents from, you know, running roughshod and just coming in and shutting it all down. So it became a standoff like what had happened in the Bundy situation. But because everyone thought that the Hammond family wasn't really backing this protest, which had nothing to do with them other than they were the trigger effect of the protest, groups like, you know, the Oath Keepers were posting on their blogs and making comments in their videos that Robert Lavoie Finnegan, you know, was a good man and he was trying to bring an issue to the forefront of Americans' minds, but his timing was improper and his strategy was wrong. And then the three percenters were, you know, saying pretty much the same thing during this time, that it had become about planning and strategy and statistics and how you should do it. And I was always kind of the opinion based on all of the posts that I see on Facebook from a lot of these groups, Oath Keepers and the three percenters and these militias, that it's like, when that day comes to stand, will you stand? Well, I don't remember in those memes saying, if the timing is right, if you're not upsetting federal agents. So they were taking a whack-a-mole kind of strategy to it, that, you know, that they won't support it because it was one guy, you know, making a big stink over something that should maybe be thought out a little better. And I found it offensive from my point of view, because you can't always pick the time and place when or where you might take a stand. But the question is, when that day comes to stand, will you stand with me? Well, that day had come to stand. They were seizing land. The Bundy thing had just happened at the Bundy Ranch a while back. And now here's this going on. And this group led by Lavoie, he was just their spokesman, were saying, this is a time and a place to stand because of what had happened to the Hammonds. And we need to tell the federal government we want our land back and stop being overreaching when it comes to a little accident of a fire and treating this guy like a terrorist, like an Al-Qaeda guy. And then the media started jumping on it. As soon as some of the bigger things like, you know, Oath Keepers and the three percenters started backpedaling and going, well, you know, the timing isn't right. Typical, you know, when conservatives will always go, well, we don't agree with blah, blah, blah. So meanwhile, the liberals and the media and social media are, you know, just destroying an issue, the conservatives will always go, well, we don't really agree with him, but we think the point should be talked about. Well, you just lost all your high ground at that moment. But the media started in with both barrels and going on and on and on and on about it, calling them Al-Qaeda and stuff like that. And then the media jumped in on it. And then the politicians like Cruz and Rubio were going, well, you know, this is a federal land issue, and which made me wonder, because I always thought Cruz was a constitutional lawyer and he should know that the federal government can't do what it's doing and that it's a violation of the Enabling Act and it's a breach of contract. No, he just wanted to play politics also. So you can see that when big key players like Rubio at the time and Cruz and the three percenters and Oath Keepers start to lose steam and momentum, then it was really the protesters in Lavoie-Finegan against the federal government. And so they tucked tail and ran, but the protesters continued to stand and say, this is unjust. Now, I'm sure when they first thought about this protest, they were just trying to get a redress of issues and going, can we have a damn conversation about the fact that the federal government cannot own this land and that the state and the people in the state and the sheriffs in the state should be just as upset as we are. But no, see, everyone started playing the, you know, political two-step or dancing to the political two-step or whatever they call it, and started going, well, you know, if I'm for these people, then it might hurt my chances for re-election. The sheriff was just a flat-out coward, and I don't think he had any thought about being reelected. But the governor, you know, she had her agenda, and it was, you know, probably linked to Uranium One, but there's not enough evidence to figure that out yet because that's been swept under a rug. Thank you, media. Thank you, FBI. Thank you, all the players that were involved in this wildlife refuge protest. So all the players that probably knew what was going on, like the governor and the judge and the FBI and these federal agencies that knew all about Uranium One and the Clintons, were probably all tied to it, but we will never know because Miller and all these guys are just sweeping it under the rug. So we can't really draw any correlation or connect any dots even 2 years later, because this has still not been brought out to we the people, because we should just shut up and mind our own business once again. Just shut up. If the federal government wants to take your land and call it a national park, shut up. But if the city wants to take your private property and tell you how to live on it, just shut up. You want to build something? You have to ask for permission and get a permit. So just shut up. Even though getting a permit to build on private property and having a city official ask you to do that is a violation of his oath of office and is unconstitutional. Shut up. So Lavoie-Finegan would not shut up. And most of the people that should have been happy, like in the community near the wildlife refuge, had been sold so much BS shoveled down their throat by the media and this spineless sheriff and this backstabbing congresswoman, that they started going, well, we don't like all this problem that they're causing in our community. So then it turned it into a safety and public nuisance issue within the little town near the wildlife refuge. Because I guess they were all offended that hundreds of people were showing up and renting their hotel rooms and talking about issues at the restaurant and paying money to eat meals and drink at the bars and sleep at the hotels was some kind of a nuisance. The nuisance was because the sheriff was causing problems and the media were making them problems blow up in the community. See, they weren't over at the wildlife refuge getting the facts of what was really going on the ground. They were sitting there basically irritating the people in the local community, and then therefore it was making it look like or to the appearance of a nuisance, which is always a problem when it comes to legal issues if you're creating a nuisance, because that's a legal word. So the die was being cast of how this was going to be staged, orchestrated, and presented to the American masses or the sheeple. And the media had their game. They had their game face on, and they were letting Twitter and everyone run with Al-Qaeda, and they were laughing about it in the media, and everything was being done to downplay the importance of private property and property issues and state land ownership and the fact that the BLM is an unconstitutional organization just like the EPA. And then the Congress people, those yo-yos, see, because the Congress can fund or not fund groups like the EPA or the BLM or any other agency by the federal government that's a bunch of yo-yos. But see, that would require you to elect good Congress people, which we don't do because these little crap storms get, you know, blown across the country, just like what happened at the wildlife refuge in Oregon. And then the congressmen sit there and they start distancing themselves from the true issue so they can get reelected. So they don't want to admit that they actually control the purse strings and could just unfund the BLM, just stop paying them. It's just like this government shutdown going on right now. People aren't getting paid. Why? Because nobody's writing the checks. So the EPA and the Board of Education and all these groups that we rail and rant about on social media could really just be made non-existence through non-payment. So the congressmen and women didn't want to talk about it. The senators didn't want to talk about it. The media wanted to exploit it because there was more excitement, you know, being able to interview politicians about how crazy Lavoie Finucane was and this whole wildlife refuge. And so you noticed that it started to slide. And it happened pretty quick. The lies and the spin started to take all momentum away from a very good protest that was for a very noble cause. Statehood, sovereignty, property rights. These are issues that are fundamental within the framework of our Constitution. They are basic issues. They are like number one, two, and three, and four of your amendments, property, privacy, rights. And so it was sliding off the front page, and anything that was on the front page or on Facebook was all mocking this protest. And so if you really go back and study it and look at some of the older media about it, you can see that the fix was in. And I guess because the feds knew how important this issue really was, not, you know, to us dopes watching it, you know, but how important, you know, state rights and state sovereignty is, that they could not let this stand, and they had to come in with full force of the federal government, and that includes scaring the hell out of the media and saying, you are going to broadcast this and play it this way. And everyone followed suit. Everyone, you know, all the way to down to Twitter, to social media. Nowadays, it's not down to Twitter. I mean, these have become media organizations now. And so, but it was played and sold and rammed down the American throats people in a way that Lavoie Finucane did not have a chance. And the protest was doomed the day it started. And it died a faster death because of Oath Keepers and the 3%ers and the militias backing away from the issue instead of maybe redirecting the conversation in a more proper way. They just took tucktail and run, and that's why I did my show on our political leaders have all been hiding behind their 501c3s, you know, and just basically not standing for freedom. They'd rather save a buck on taxes. So that's what happened. And now, all of a sudden, there's, you know, a bunch of protesters just basically screaming into the wind because everyone else just shut up. And that's what we did. As a society, we did not recognize a true threat to our freedom and liberty at that moment. and where something good could have been done. I'm not saying it would have been a silver bullet, but when something good could have came about through this and a good debate, as they're, you know, air quotes, debate about all these issues that we're all supposed to discuss, you know, according to the media, it could have been a good debate. It was left in the wind to wither on the vine and just go the way of the dodo bird is what happened to it. So we're going to take another break, and then we'll be back to talk about, you know, how all of these events and circumstances left a man on the side of the road to be shot and murdered because no one was left around. Everybody had shut up.
Hey, all. It's Rob Alderucci, the host of The Growing Homestead, and I would like to invite you on my adventure into all things homesteading, where we will learn to raise our own fruit, vegetables, as well as caring for livestock in a push for self-sufficiency. Join me Sundays at noon.
All right, well, I want to get into my thoughts on Robert Lavoie Finucane. He was a good man. I've never heard anything bad from his friends or family. He was just a noble guy, kind of like you would hear about, oh, you know, one of the founding fathers that, you know, signed the Declaration of Independence and then all of a sudden got shanghaied and hung from a bridge somewhere for being a traitor. But nobody, you know, would sit there and go, oh, that guy was an idiot. No, they still knew he was a good man and was hung for treason for a noble cause. Robert Lavoie Finucane was murdered and shot for a good cause. He stood for freedom. He stood for liberty. He was a good person. He wasn't a terrorist. He wasn't an Al-Qaeda member. He was a good man that loved his family, loved his children, and loved his country. And for that, yes, it got him murdered. But people walk away thinking, oh, that's that crazy kook that got shot by the FBI for being a terrorist. Now, that's the media side of the story. But you need to understand that that's not what happened. He was a good man. He was as good as any of the founding fathers that might have gotten hung and tried for treason before the Constitution was ratified and before we won the Revolutionary War. At that time, before we won and before we were free, all of the signers and all of those people that were fighting for liberty in a constitutional republic were considered traitors by England. So Robert Lavoie Finucane could be considered a traitor to the federal bureaucracy that has been created that thinks it runs our states. So F them anyway, because Robert Lavoie Finucane was a good man. He had values. He had integrity. So why did he choose to take a stand? I think he believed in it because he was a rancher. He understood these things that were happening in his state, and he was upset about what had happened in Bunkerville, and he understood what was happening in Oregon, and so therefore he said all these issues are connected. Every state is being robbed basically of its birthright, its statehood convention, and its statehood enabling act was the birth of a state, and they were being robbed of their birthright. And so he took a stand. He said, maybe we can fix this. Maybe if we get enough good people to bring to bear, maybe we can make a change. Not maybe end the BLM, but make a change. Bring up the level of awareness and try to get something done. But everybody was so busy, you know, with the old expression CYA covering their rear ends, that they didn't stand, you know, which is one of my biggest problems I have when everyone posts those things on a timeline. It's like, when that day comes to stand, will you stand? Well, apparently not. And the minute I see one of those, I always think of Robert Lavoie Finucane, because he stood and everybody wanted to play politics and he died. So that's what I think of when I see him. It's an automatic reaction of mine when I see that. When that day comes to stand, will you stand? And it's not a tired or obsolete expression. I just wonder. So when the next time that day comes to stand, will you stand? You know, we all had reasons why we couldn't maybe be there standing next to Lavoie at the time. But It makes no excuses for the big organizations that have raised a lot of money to be able to go there. The Oath Keepers, the Three Percenters, the Militias. See, that's in their wheelhouse. They raise money to be at important events in America's history. And so maybe you and I can't afford to just close our businesses or be laid off from work for a month to go and stand. But we can stand in other ways. And nobody seemed to be doing that. Everybody other than Twitter and everyone going, oh, yeah, Al-Qaeda. That was their way to stand for a federal bureaucracy and a Leviathan that has become too overreaching, too powerful, and too corrupt. So they stood for their side, which is what I just explained. But I didn't see a lot of standing on the side of Constitution, freedom, liberty. Yeah, there were people like, you know, Chris Ann Hall, Sheriff Mack. They all made videos and they were there because they're retired or have some money and they could be there. And Chris Ann Hall helped a lot and Sheriff Mack helped a lot. But not everyone can stand. But when you have the ability to stand in social media, to get into arguments and lose Facebook friends, to stand for what is right, I don't see the constitutional patriots standing all that much. Now, granted, we're busy. We have lives. We're raising our children. We're trying to teach them values. We've got scouting groups and things that we're just busy. And maybe it's that we're afraid. Maybe we don't want to irritate that friend on Facebook because he's a member of the community, or you just don't want to be that abrasive of a person. So you post a meme or two, but do you really write a blog? Do you make a video? Do you do it? Nowadays, you can do live, you know, YouTube videos. How many people would now just still stand? Go ahead, piss everyone off. I've made a lot of enemies because I take a purist constitutional look at things. And I do that because it's the right thing. Everyone talking about right now and emergency powers or emergency action by the president. That sounds cute. Everyone thinks it's awesome. Yeah, do it, Trump, because we all support Trump. It is unconstitutional. And no president has the right to declare a state of emergency. It's, you know, it's happened so many times now that we think it's okay. But it really takes away power from those agencies in the government, not even agencies, from one of the other three branches of government. So there's a video on it by Chris Ann Hall talking about it. And I've posted that on prepperguy.com. You can watch it. You have to sort around to find it, but it's there. Of why a president can't have that power, because it starts undermining things. So I post it and I talk about it. And people go, oh, you just don't like Trump. Or, oh, you're one of them. I don't know what one of them is. I mean, I guess it's one of them people that think that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Maybe I am one of them. You know, but I don't know what, but I still irritate people because it's like, I'm sorry, but it doesn't work. I'm that way with nutrition. You've all heard me talk about nutrition. It's like, it's physiology. It's the way it is. You drink poison, you will die. The Constitution is the same way. There are rules that govern it, and you cannot sidestep those rules without downstream effects that will cause catastrophic issues. And this is what we have happening. BLM, all of those acts I read off to you, you know, about grazing and BLM laws and stuff, they're unconstitutional. And the downstream effect is that we're losing our rights. And Robert Lavoie Finnegan stood for those rights. He took a stand. And so this episode is not to bash the three percenters or the oath keepers or the militias. But I am sorry. When that day come to stand, they didn't. They tried to. And God bless them for trying to. But I have seen no effort on their part to stand up, you know, to get back up. Because they basically fell down on, you know, in Oregon, in the wildlife refuge. They fell flat on their face. And over the years since then, I've seen nobody in those organizations saying, here's what we've learned, and this is what we need to do. So I don't know. Maybe they do. Maybe it's in some, you know, back thought that they have, you know, rattling around their head that they don't want to give it out. But, you know, I think that if you took the Constitutional Sheriffs and Police Officers Association by Sheriff Mack, and you took the Oath Keepers, and you took the 3 percenters and these militias, and you got them in a room and you said, look, here's how we can fight this. Whether it's BLM, stealing land, which is really something that should be fought. But there's many other issues that can be fought and people can take a stand for, like Robert Lavoie Finucane did. There are counties that have constitutional sheriffs. And I'm sure Oath Keepers has a way of knowing which ones they are, because if they're in the same room talking to each other, they could say, do a protest here, 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 and here. The sheriffs are good and they will support you. So if you're going to protest gun confiscation, Second Amendment, you know, gun laws, go here, 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 and here, and here. The sheriffs will be behind you. And then if you take 3 percenters and you go over here and you're going to be the spokesman for these, the sheriff's going to back you up. And we have police officers in that area that will be good. And then you can actually have not so much of a protest like went on in at the wildlife refuge, but you can, you know, make a stand for Second Amendment, and you will have the support of everyone that goes there. And if you talk to these media outlets, not the crazies, you know, out there, the loons, you know, like, you know, lamestream media, but you talk to these media outlets in this area, and here's a blogger that's really pro Second Amendment, and he supports the 3 percenters, and he supports the Oath Keepers, then you can go here and you can make a little stand. And if you do it in a way all at the same time across the country, especially like with this wildlife refuge here, if they would have done that in 6 or 7 places across the country at one time, the FBI couldn't have mustered enough people to squash it like they did in Oregon. Now all of a sudden they're spread really thin. And instead of it being in Oregon, it could have been in another county in Oregon that had a constitutional sheriff, to where it would have been a whole different ball game. And if you do it all at one time, this is called a strategy. See, it's like a football play. You know, you don't just say, okay, quarterback, run over there and throw the ball. You got to make sure the catcher or the receiver is going to be there. And you got to make sure the whole defensive line is knowing what's going on. So that way it's a successful pass, because everyone is working together to make that one pass. Now, if you take that and you multiply it across the country, with 3,300 counties, and you go, here are some issues in these areas where states, you know, have been robbed of their land, especially over here in the West. Our counties have been just robbed blind. Then you go, in these 15 counties on, let's pick a date right now while we're talking about it. June, it's summertime, it's nice out. In June, maybe even May, because it's not so hot and not so cold, we're gonna have a protest-like situation at these 15 wildlife refuges, parks, national forests, whatever rocks your world. We have in place a defensive line. They're all going to be there. So we have the constitutional sheriff there, all of his deputies, and we have a good police force that understand things for the community, and we have good media in that local community, so when people start showing up to rent hotel rooms and eat food, they're not being played as victims, then it would work. See, because you do it on May 15th. There you go. Now we got a date. It's in the future, May 15th, 2019. There you go. Now that part of the plan is done. Made the call. Now you get your players on the field. You find out what counties are going to work. And you get that all in place. And then you talk to the sheriffs and you talk to the deputies and you talk to the law enforcement. You talk to the county and the city representatives there. And you make sure you're going to do this in the right area. You're not going to throw it downfield out of bounds. You're going to throw it in the perfect area to where it can be caught. And you got all your line going that way. Okay, so there's step two. And then you get the right players there and the right spokesmen talking to the right people. The federal government cannot show up They might send a couple representatives, but they don't have the force that UC came to bear in Oregon against Lavoie Finnegan, because he was just one guy at one wildlife refuge at one point in time. But if you have 15 or 20 of them, now all of a sudden you have a whole different dynamic. And then you do your little protest. And then you call to question these state lands being robbed and taken away from states to where they can't even raise money with their own leases because all that money's being funneled off to the feds. And you make a point. And then when you've made your point, you got some victories in your hat. You might not pull it off in all 20 places, but all you got to do is get one win in your behind your belt. One thing, it's like a battle plan strategy. You might not win every battle, but after a while, if you haven't at least won one, you don't have a victory to tout, then all of a sudden you lose support. So get a couple victories. I think if you did it planned enough, you would have a one big, huge victory at probably 90% of all of those places you did that. And then you're still going to have to count on the media to present it right. But if you get the right politicians, who really cares if it's a story that's on the main network? As long as congressmen and people in Washington are now changing the law, that really is what matters. You don't need to be going viral and getting a million hits and all that stuff to be successful. You need the laws to be changed, and that's the victory. So if you win it and you show the people in that state, especially if maybe five in each state in different districts to where you're showing your Congress people in those districts, in those counties, this is what we want you talking about, stupid. Not all this other crap that Washington red meat that they keep throwing on your plate to where you just keep gobbling it up. No, these issues that matter to your constituents, dummy, this is what we want you to fix. And see, that's a step forward. But will it happen? I don't know. I highly doubt it because, you know, quite frankly, we're busy. And good people are busy, but you can't always fall back on that tired and lame excuse and go, well, you know, that's what's happening. You know, I care, but I'm busy. Well, you can do other things while you're busy. Like I'm busy. I'm adding on to my house. I own a business. I have a job to go to at tonight at 7 o'clock and work until 1 o'clock and then get up in the morning and be at my business at 8 o'clock. Because that's life. I'm busy, but I'm making this video and a podcast out of it, and it'll be on the radio in Utah. And so that's all I can do. But if 100,000 people do all they can do, that's a lot getting done. And I've always thought of it as like, you know, we put 100% into it, and we put 100% into it, and we put 100% into it. And when we're really close, unfortunately, we don't know how close we are. We sit down to rest and we lose our momentum and we're overtaken. And we sometimes have to start over and start pushing that rock back up the hill. But if there's thousands and hundreds of thousands of people helping get that rock up the hill, when you take a break, there's someone else stepping up for you and going, I got this, take a break, reload. We keep moving forward because you don't want to take one step forward and two steps back. It's okay to take two steps forward and one step back, but never step back more than you've gone forward. So we need people working, pulling together, getting together causes. And I'm not talking about Facebook groups and all that silly nonsense that can be marginalized in a heartbeat with the media or be squished by a federal government. No, just people in their heart doing the right things, beginning behind proper things. So I hope you enjoyed this little tribute to Lavoie Finnegan. I didn't talk about him much because, you know, what happened to him, he was screwed. There's a lot of video out there on the shooting of Lavoie Finnegan, and you can watch it. It's all been covered up and swept over and marginalized. So I didn't want to talk about it. I just wanted to talk about a man that inspired me to get a little more involved because I could see his passion for America, not his passion for fame, not his passion to be in the spotlight, just his passion to say, we need to fight this. This is an issue worth fighting for. And so he inspired me, and I wanted to talk a little bit about him and put his name out there and dedicate this show to Robert Lavoie Finnegan. because he was a patriot. When that day came to stand, he stood. And I think that's noble. I think it's honorable. And I think it should be remembered as a good thing. So we will talk to you all later next week about something else. Have a great week. Bye-bye.